Can I look over the notes?
No, you can't. That's the whole point of this, is that I teach you.
Okay, but I thought you that you said you had... Okay, that's a lot of stuttering for one sentence. She sells by the seashore.
You should have done that. Your vocal warm-ups before we started. Hello, everyone. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Mrs. Feminist Podcast.
Let's not speculate. I don't want to get sued.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second episode of Mrs. Feminist. Woohoo! So as you can hear, I have a guest with me. Why don't you introduce yourself, guest?
Guest. Really? I'm a guest? I thought I was the co-host.
No, you're not.
Really?
No.
But I'm the one who came up with the whole idea that you should start a podcast.
Husband, obviously, John.
Don't I get a producer status then?
Yeah, but it doesn't pay.
Oh, shoot.
You're like a figurehead.
Oh, okay.
Because...
I get that $1 a year salary.
If you're lucky.
Does that mean I get stock options then, or...?
Sure. Why not? What's yours is mine, baby. I really feel like we should
have hammered this out before.
Well, I'll draw up a contract.
Okay.
Okay, so today we are talking about the history of feminism. So there is a long history of feminism. We're not really going to go into all of it because this episode would be 10,000 years long.
That's a long history of feminism then.
Yeah, well, it's been around since day one.
A summary would take 10,000 years.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to be teaching John about the history of feminism.
Okay.
The whole point is for him to have witty comments, but... I don't think that's going to happen.
I feel like I do have witty comments. You just you don't appreciate them.
Well, we'll let everyone decide if you're funny or not. But I think I know what their vote will be. Okay, so feminism. Feminism came in three waves. So like I said, I'm not going to go into the nitty-gritty, but there's kind of hallmarks of each wave that are important to understand, especially when we're explaining feminism to people, because a lot of people will say, like, oh, well, you got the right to vote 100 years ago, get over it. But there's still a lot of work that needs to be done, and a lot more work than just suffrage. So, the first wave of feminism happened in the late 1800s to the early 1900s, and focused primarily on women fighting for the right to own property and suffrage, so the right to vote. We have to note that feminists did exist long before the first wave. Did you know that, Jonathan?
I feel like I did.
Can you give me an example of a late 1800 feminist?
Joan of Arc.
Yeah. That was one of my examples.
Really?
It's so,
almost like I know you well.
Okay, well, here's some other examples. In the 1200s, there was Helen of Anjou, and she was a Serbian queen who established women's schools.
Women's schools. So what did they teach there? Like, sewing? Homemaking?
You are going to get cooking. Fired from this so fast. Oh, boy. In 1500s, there was this dude named Heinrich Cornelius Agrippa.
Agrippa.
He wrote about the theological and moral superiority of women. I feel like I know of, like, five relatives I could send us writing to. Let's name them.
No.
No.
That sounds like a great idea.
In the 1600s, there's Aphra Behn, and she was a feminist writer that we learned about in school, but I don't remember.
Okay, but let's go back to this Agrippa guy. What kind of theological writings did he have?
He said, I just...
No, but, like, what did he focus on? What was his
arguments? The theological and moral superiority of woman.
Okay, but what were his supporting arguments to that? If you're a theologian...
Probably the gospel, for starters.
Okay, but he would reference a specific book or word study
or... I don't know. I didn't Google that far.
Okay, well, maybe you gotta do your research, honey.
Okay. In 1776, this is one of my favorites... Abigail Adams wrote a letter to her husband, John Adams, warning him not to leave women's rights out of the Constitution. She said, and I quote, "If particular care and attention is not paid to the ladies, we are determined to foment..." Foment?
Foment, yeah, that's...
Is that a word?
Yeah, it's a word.
Okay.
It's like to argue for or...
Okay. Ladies, we are determined to foment a rebellion and will not hold ourselves bound to any laws in which we have no voice or representation.
I feel like they should have taken that a step further, considering the stuff that wasn't included in the Constitution is still being fought over today.
Well, I just think it was funny because she was basically like, listen, if you don't include us in this, then we don't give two shits about your constitution and we'll do whatever the hell we want.
We'll go on strike.
Feminism has been active since forever, not always officially or organized or necessarily called feminism, but since the day women were denied basic human rights, women have been fighting for those basic human rights. So that's a super exciting legacy that feminists of today get to be a part of, and know that it's not just Meryl Streep and Suffragette that we get to be a part of, but it's this huge history dating back to forever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very tumultuous history at that. For a long time, women who spoke out against the injustices against women were basically considered witches, and that was that. And I really like that quote that says, "We are the granddaughters of the witches you failed to burn."
Ooh. Yeah, you've told me that quote before.
I want that tattooed on my forehead. For everyone to read.
That would be a job killer.
Yeah.
Also, tattoos directly on bone hurt a lot.
I could just, like, brush them up. It'd be, like, the middle finger by my forehead. Okay, so first wave feminists fought for the right to own property, work, and have a vote. So something really interesting happened after World War II. So while all the men went off to fight in the wars, there was still a ton of work back home that needed to be done, so women kind of had to step up, and they got the opportunity to go out into the workforce and get those jobs, because factories still had to run and blah, blah, blah. So then after the war, the men came back and were like, okay, cool, like, you can go back home now, I'm here, thanks. And they were like, well, no, screw you, I'm staying here, I like this. And so that was a really interesting shift in the workforce. In the 1960s is when the second wave really got rolling. So this wave was all about demanding that women be considered autonomous human beings. Women wanted to make their own money, control their own bodies, and take hold of their future. So the 1960s and like 70s was like the hippies.
Mm-hmm.
They were like sex, love, peace, justice.
Rock and roll.
Rock and roll. Exactly.
It's interesting how each successive generation is formed in rebellion to the previous one.
Yeah.
Like, once you gain the right to property, then that kind of frees you up to fight for more things and takes you step to step to step kind of thing.
Well, and I think the reason why the right to vote was so important to get first is because that was a big way for them to say, like, look, we actually do have our own minds and, like, mm-hmm. can form intelligent decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like they needed that for, like, men to take them seriously.
When did the right to vote happen in Canada?
If I was good at this, I would have looked that up. The third wave is difficult to define because it was really focused on the individual experience. So these feminists were reacting against the feminism of their mothers. Their feminism was really deconstructionist in nature, which makes it somewhat, like, scattered, I guess. Third wave feminists were very much focused on how have I specifically been oppressed and how can I be empowered? How can I make this world a better place for me? And then secondary to that, for other women.
Mm.
So this movement was important because it was women taking a moment to check in with themselves and work to make their lives better so that they could turn around and help make other women's lives better. For example, during the third wave, the workplace for women was still, and it is today, but it was really dog-eat-dog, and women kind of knew their spots in the workforce were limited, and so instead of competing with the general public, it was like woman against woman to get those spots. Now, the women who succeeded in getting those spots have been able to turn around and help other women climb up as well. But it was very competitive.
Pushing for parity.
Yeah. And this has been also one of that movement's biggest criticisms, because it really focused on how the individual can overcome, but not so much how the group can. Mm-hmm. And this meant the women who were twice minority, so first as a woman, but then because of their race or class, education, ability, etc., were really overlooked. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of the biggest criticism of the third wave was that it was very, like, white feminism. Mm-hmm. Because, like, white women were making leaps and bounds, but they weren't necessarily recognizing mm-hmm. that.
Almost pulling up the ladder behind them kind of thing.
Yeah, which wasn't great. So now we are in a somewhat unofficial fourth wave of feminism that's kind of pulling itself back together to use a strong community and movement to enact change. So things like the Women's March are great examples of feminists coming together to stand up for their values. We can also look at the Me Too movement and how women have come together to say, time's up. Women have been laying so much groundwork, and now we get to rise up. So we've come a long way in the last 100 years, but there's still lots of work to do.
Yeah. Do you think that the fracturing of globalism has fractured human communities into smaller and smaller divisions? Like, because you can find any echo chamber you want to find on the internet now. So do you think that's affected women's ability to organize?
No, I think it's made it better.
Yeah.
Because, like, okay, if you use the internet as an example, you're all of a sudden being exposed to a lot more ideas than you would find in just your own community. Mm-hmm. Like, even on Instagram, I'm friends with feminists who are doing work in, like, Louisiana, and there's a girl in Africa, and there's one in India, and, like, knowing what they're fighting for and what's going on in their areas has been important to me, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So it's like you get to be interconnected with all these people globally to form, like, a bigger movement to help move forward everyone's causes and the things everyone is pushing for.
Okay. Our rabbits really like to interrupt us and make a lot of noise, so we've moved to the piano room.
Okay, we'll try this. I think it's a bit more echoey in here. So since we have talked for quite a while now, which is great, I'm going to share with you guys and with John some stories of cool badass women throughout history that maybe wouldn't have explicitly called themselves a feminist, but they were badasses, and I think it's important we hear their stories. But in 625 AD, Wu Zetian reigned during the Tang Dynasty as the only female emperor. John, go sit down.
I want to see that name.
No.
Can I?
You want to see the name?
Yeah,
I want to. Wu Zetian. But it's
Wu Zetian.
Yeah, I shouldn't say it with a French accent because she wasn't French.
Maybe we should get your brother to dub that over for us.
Zach will dub that over. Okay. She is the only female emperor in Chinese history, largely because of Confucian beliefs that discouraged placing women in positions of power. Wow, how crazy that a man would write about how women have no place in power. Crazy.
Yeah, not crazy at all.
Okay, here's what Wu did. She became the favorite concubine of Emperor Taizong as a young teenager. She used her cunning skills to climb the ranks to eventually marry that emperor, and then to obtain more power after he died.
That's impressive.
She used her sexuality to get power. And if that isn't feminist, I don't know what the hell was. It was amazing. She began a campaign to elevate the status of women in society by ordering biographies of famous women to be written and giving other women positions of power in the political system. Eventually, her son removed himself from office in 690 AD, so Wu could go on to become one of the best-loved and most peaceful emperors in history.
That's impressive.
Yeah, so her son was a feminist too. Maybe he was like, this life isn't for me. I want to go find myself.
Where did early century Chinese people go to find themselves?
I don't know. Next one. Just because a woman's wearing a crown doesn't mean she's a queen or even a princess. By the way, I stole all of this from an article on Nylon by writer Rebecca... Damn it, these last names. Rebecca Dekzinski.
That is a very Polish name.
Yeah. Rebecca, shout out to you. Thank you for this. Okay. Not Rebecca. Back to the story. With the death of her father, Tamar of Georgia was named Kane. Born in 1169, Tamar was the first female ruler of Georgia and helped the kingdom to flourish in its golden age of prosperity and peace. That's not to say she was gentle, though. The country achieved much of its stability due to Tamar's massively successful military ventures. What's more, and this is my favorite part, the ruler divorced her first husband and expelled him from the country. So she was like, you suck, get out of here. I'm the king, I can do whatever the F I want.
How many times do you have to leave the toilet seat out before you get expelled from a country?
I don't know, quite a lot. And this is big because it was very rigidly Christian at the time. Mm-hmm. And those Christians were like, divorce is evil.
Well, yeah.
On top of all of that, she was canonized by the Eastern Orthodox Church.
That's impressive.
Yeah, so no big deal. Okay, next. Of all the possible titles for a ruler, is that her dog crying at the door?
I think it is.
Okay, she's fine. Of all the possible titles for a ruler, warrior princess may be the most badass. Born in 1260 as a great-great-granddaughter of Genghis Khan.
Genghis Khan. Genghis Khan.
Genghis Khan. Katulan.
Who famously, his DNA is found in about 0.5% of the world's population.
So, Kutulan was... Let's call her Kutulan.
It's a Mongol.
Let's call her K. Just for short.
Mary K.
No. K was Mongolian royalty best known for her independent spirit and incredible wrestling abilities, which were recorded in history by Marco Polo. As her father taught her the inner workings of the military and encouraged her political ambitions, he also desired that his daughter should have a husband who truly deserved her. So, not particularly wanting to be married off, Kay set forth a challenge. She would marry any man who could beat her in a wrestling match, but any man who she beat would have to give her a horse. She wound up with 10,000 horses.
I feel like that might be a bit of an exaggeration.
No, she had a farm of 10,000 horses. Next. Born in approximately 1700, Anne Boney was a legendary Irish-American pirate who abandoned her sailor husband to take up a life plundering the Caribbean. That's it.
That's an R-rated story.
That's the whole story. She was like, screw you, I'm out of here, I want to be a pirate. If you can't imagine living without your smartphone, there's an Austrian movie star you should seriously think. Born in 1914, Hedy Lamarr was not only a major impact on the silver screen with her notorious Come Hither stare, but also developed radio technology that helped the Allies to win World War II. With co-inventor George Antheil, Lamarr invented a wireless communication system that helped America to electronically send military matters under top security. This major tech development helped lead to the creation of all wireless communication devices we use today. Cell phones, fax machines, and more. How do you feel?
I feel empowered.
That's good. Do you feel empowered as a woman?
Yes. Very empowered as a woman.
There's a lot I left out. Well, maybe every week for the podcast we should read a couple stories.
Yeah.
If you guys would like that, comment, subscribe.
All right, every YouTube personality
comment,
ever.
Comment, subscribe. Let me know what you think. Comment with a heart emoji if you watched this week's video.
You have videos?
No.
I'm missing something here.
Okay, but actually, if you would like to be part of the conversation, we would love to have you. Send us your stories, your thoughts, your comments to mrsfeminist@gmail.com. And you can follow us on Instagram at mrsfeministpodcast.
Alright.
Actually, the Gmail is mrsfeministpodcast@gmail.com.
That's probably a pretty crucial thing to have.
Yeah. You guys, I'm so new to this. I don't know what I'm doing.
Well.
Anyways, thanks guys.
This episode brought to you by Casey bumping into things.
And our rabbits.
scratching
being really loud
and deciding to play now of all times.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you, John, for joining us.
No problem.
Thank you for being a feminist ally.
I mean, it's such a sacrifice I have to make.
Yeah.